effects during treatment. More about integrative cancer care is available at cancercenter.com.
Mayor Curry warns of massive property tax hikes in Jacksonville if his pension plan doesn't pass. Governor Scott begs the president for funds to fight the Zika virus. And one local museum opens a gender-neutral bathroom. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and watch the show every day, video on demand with our partner, TVJax.com. Just ahead, all of the news of the week with our Friday roundtable. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, find out why the state's young Democrats are meeting in Jacksonville this week, plus a preview of A Night with the Stars right here at WJCT Studios this weekend. All of that ahead, but first, it's Friday, time for our weekly media roundtable of local journalists. Fred Matthews, who blogs at The Examiner, here with us this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Larry Hannon of the Florida Times Union is here.
Good to be here.
A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics.
Hello.
And our own WJCT analyst, John Byrne.
Good morning.
Guys, so good to see you. Lots of news to discuss, from the governor begging President Obama for additional money to fight Zika virus in Florida, to that new gender-neutral bathroom at the Museum of Science and History, and more. But first this morning, our top story. Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry this week continued to work to make the case for a half-cent sales tax referendum for the city. Curry saying that if voters don't approve this plan to pay down Jacksonville's massive pension debt, we're looking at a 30% property tax increase to deal with the problem. What are your thoughts about the mayor's pension proposal and his warning? Give us a call. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, weigh in on Facebook. John Byrne, let's begin with you, our business analyst. The mayor is saying that Jacksonville is on the brink of going over a financial cliff if we do not approve this half-cent sales tax extension on August 30th. What about his warning that this could result in huge property tax increases? If we don't pass the sales tax.
If we don't pass it, right. Well, you know, this is just scare tactics, I think. I really, the mayor has to be a little bit more forthcoming on how this sales tax extension is going to really solve the problem. I think people, once they hear an explanation that makes sense, they will come around to support it. But boy, I'll tell you what, this is very heavy-handed stuff. And I don't think you really change people's minds by scaring them to death. But, hey, maybe I'm wrong.
Well, A.G. Gankarski, as you've written, Curry has staked much of his political capital in his first term as mayor on getting this sales tax plan passed. Right. And so no punches are being pulled from the mayor's team as they try to make this case to the voters. And they're throwing out what they say are really ugly alternatives if we don't approve this plan.
Yeah, I talked to Curry about this Wednesday, I believe, and you know, he's not interested in raising the millage 30%. He said that. He said he's opposed to tax increases. And he actually said that, you know, people expecting instant gratification, like people in Northwest Jacks or the beach communities asking where their cuts are, you know, it's an example of, you know, just a mindset that is wrong with this country, basically, is what he said. But here's the issue. Curry is running into a couple of problems in selling this. The first thing is collective bargaining is going to determine, you know, what the pension plans are for police and fire and other city employees. If it's another defined benefit plan, people are going to feel, you know, betrayed in some level. Also, the amortization piece, like what's going to happen with the $2.7 trillion or billion-dollar liability, you know, after this passes or if it passes, you know, we don't know yet. Curry said the other day he could let it ride out for, you know, 14 years, which wouldn't give any immediate relief. So I think that question's got to be answered also. And you've, you've got to wonder, you know, voters are pretty low information about certain things. They don't understand amortization. They don't understand, you know, finances in a deep way. And, you know, Curry's been used to running as a Republican. You know, he's RPUF chair and, you know, he's basically been in party politics. But selling this initiative to a larger group of people, you know, it's a learning curve for him and, you know, for his team also.
Fred Matthews.
I mean, there's going to be a finite number of votes that are going to come out in August for this. He's having to launch this campaign over the summer when everybody's gone, and they're not paying attention to it. I mean, that was part of the strategy, but it's sort of a, you know, you got to throw everything at him. We all know there's not going to be a property tax increase. He says he declares that could happen, but on the other side of his mouth, he says I'm not going to raise any taxes. I'm never going to raise any taxes. So I mean, you know, it's. You know, just pass the bill in August and let's see what's happened. The people who should really be afraid of this are the unions. And of course, we have this attack on the pension board again this week. And of course, underpinning that is to really just scrap them and get rid of them as part of this whole initiative.
Is that easier said than done? Larry Hannon.
It would be very hard to do, not completely impossible. I mean, the thing is, no one likes the pension board, so Curry can bash them as much as he wants. Whether that helps policy, I don't know. I will say that Curry's whole 30% property tax kind of reminded me of the school levies they used to cover back in Ohio, where school boards would threaten to cut the football team unless voters passed it.
Exactly.
And suddenly it
would pass. Oh, can't have that!
And everyone would be mad at the superintendent, but it would still pass with 70%.
You know, but here's the thing, though. Millage rate increases, they do happen. We had one a few years ago, 14% millage rate increase imposed by council because they weren't happy with the budget that came out of the previous administration. And, you know, Curry and his team basically ran against that. They said, you know, Alvin Brown, liberal Alvin Brown, raise your property taxes. So, you know, 14% millage increase, you know, kind of blink and you miss it. I mean, nobody's really feeling that at this point. And nobody's saying, wow, my taxes are 14% more. It's just kind of absorbed. So now, there is that aspect.
John, the other option the mayor's saying is that if we don't pass this sales tax extension, we'll either see it a property tax increase or we'll be like Detroit. We'll have to restructure our debts. Jacksonville would, in effect, almost be declaring bankruptcy like Detroit. A parade of horribles.
Yeah, wow. Well, I don't see the exodus to Detroit happening around here. But, you know, the mayor really just has to answer one question. And he has to have this answer. And that is, how does a sales tax extension that actually starts kicking in more revenue in 2030 help out the finances of the city today? That's the question. And I know he's got an answer, but... You know, he's really kind of insulting all of our intelligence by refusing to go into it, I think.
And I think this is a hard sell because it's tough to imagine. If you say, well, pass this half-cent sales tax, we'll build these roads, we'll build sidewalks here, that's easy for the public to understand. The public doesn't understand what they're getting with this, other than the idea that they're going
to
pay.
It's like trying to prove a negative.
Correct.
I mean, you're funding something that you're avoiding worse outcomes. If you fund this.
You basically, I mean, to a certain extent, what you're saying is pass this and nothing will change, which is not really an easy sell.
Yeah.
But people want, if they pass it, they want to know that things will eventually get better.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things he's saying, though. He's saying that, you know, we've had deferred maintenance. We don't have enough cops. We don't have enough firemen. Our roads are jacked up and so on. And, you know, Curry has said on a couple of occasions that people aren't noticing the attrition in city services. So, you know, the underlying implicit argument is that if our finances are a little bit better, if we have a little bit more revenue, maybe we can deal some of this deferred maintenance that dates back a decade or more.
And that's the problem with not wanting to increase the basic taxes that pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
Millage pays for that. A percentage of the property tax pays for the school board. That's what it pays for. Those things are tangible. But we've elected a government who says they're not going to raise taxes. They don't believe in raising taxes. And furthermore, they believe in cutting government. I mean, that's the government we elected.
And
the majority of them believe in cutting government and giving it back to the people. So you're not going to get those kind of instant gratification fixes now on roads and bridges and services because we don't want to pay for them.
Argument that, as you mentioned, you've got a mayor and a team around him who comes from the party of messaging in the opposite direction. from the way they've got a message now. Yeah. They're trying to develop some political muscles that might not come naturally.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be a holistic approach. You know, the proof is going to be how city council helps to sell it. A lot of Democrats on council are committed to helping to sell it. You know, the local party is sort of neutral on it. They're researching the position. They may not have a position on it, which is interesting in itself. But yeah, I mean, the messaging has got to be a positive, holistic messaging, which is this is how it's been and this is how it's going to get better. And, you know, when we see the ad campaign, we're going to see, you know, that roll out. But yeah, Curry hasn't fully made that case yet.
All right, let's go to your calls. We have lots of calls about this, including from some folks who won't even have to vote on this, like Michael in St. Augustine. Hi, Michael. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I find myself kind of in between everybody there. I recognize that something has to be done to deal with the ongoing liabilities down the road of retirement and so forth. That's true, and I realize that something has to be done about infrastructure. But I wonder, has the mayor really made any genuine effort to do cuts? I'm sure that there are plenty of people that say, okay, government doesn't need to be cut, but I think anything needs to be cut. I think you can sit down and take a look at what your requirements are, and even if it's only a token, I think if people began to see that the mayor was serious about managing the city, And that's why I'm kind of between and betwixt on this subject, but really serious about managing the city as opposed to this vitriol and this back and forth in the media about, you know, who shot John. I think then the people could take a look and say, well, this guy's serious. Let's take a serious look at his request for attack.
Okay. Thank you, Michael. Michael down in St. Augustine.
Alvin Brown did that. He didn't get reelected. That's the best I recall.
I'm sure that Mayor Curry has not forgotten that. John Burr, you wanted to react to that?
Well, I don't really know what to say about this issue because I'll tell you, as we said from the beginning, it's a very tough sell.
Here are just a few of many tweets we're getting about the pension push in Jacksonville. The mayor needs to be specific with how all this is going to work. Here's a tweet from Tom. Why not raise a bit of our property tax now and start now paying down the pension fund debt, then take the sales tax in 2030? From Jim, Curry's pension bill closes up to 3 pension plans, which is why I am willing to vote for up to 1 of his referenda. Here's another idea. Restructure the pension plan and reorg the trustees. They have failed as stewards. Okay, lots of tweets, calls, emails. The number to join us, 549-2937. Bob on the north side. Go ahead.
Yes, I really enjoy this intelligent discussion we're having about this issue. And I totally agree that, you know, a better path for the mayor to take, in my opinion, would be, see, look, if it takes a half mil to match the $145 million or the $200 million you got to pay every year until 2014 or whenever the thing kicks in, then we pay that. We take the money that way we will know that the millage rate is going towards that one issue. And then what was going towards the pension fund, we could put towards improvements. You know, this saying cut government, that's nice to say, but, you know, the reality is it's been cut, and the services are being affected. So I would be much more inclined to support the mayor if he would have an honest discussion, stop trying to scare us, and raise the millage rate appropriate amount to cover what we owe until it kicks in. Then I can support it wholeheartedly.
Okay, thanks for that. When Mayor Curry was on this program, he basically said, look, that's a non-starter. I'm not going to do that. That's just not on the table.
It's not on the table. And as long as it's not on the table, then we all have to wait until 2030 when he's out of office. And we have, two more mayors by that time. And we'll be looking back at what Delaney did 20 years ago. And now it's being undone. And we'll be trying to fund Jacksonville Journey all over again. And maybe, who knows, the crime rate may be at, 50% by then. Everybody on the north side will be moving to the south side because they won't be able to stay there because the crime will be so bad.
And the thing about, you know, these sales taxes.
Wow.
You're
at a rate for Curry.
Larry.
The thing about these sales taxes is, you know, they tend to negatively impact the people with the least money in a way that property taxes do not. I mean, the whole idea.
Well, that's the argument against it, that it's a regressive tax.
Yes.
But the mayor doesn't agree with that.
The mayor doesn't agree agree with that. But that, you know, there are a lot of people out there who are just so frustrated by the no new taxes ever for any reason. I suspect a lot of them will vote against this just to send a message to the mayor.
Well, there are a couple issues here. I mean, the sales tax actually affects people passing through, people who come from St. John's County to work in Jacksonville, Nassau County, places like that. But, you know, there's a second political consideration. I talked to John Delaney about a year ago after Curry got elected, and Delaney told me that in his first term, his worry is that somebody's going to run from the right and oppose him for re-election. And if Curry raises the millage rate, you best believe that some opportunistic politician, you know, Mike Hogan type perhaps, you know, will say, he raised your taxes. I can do better. He didn't keep his promises. And Lenny Curry does not want to deal with the challenge from the right because, you know, that takes him out of his comfort zone.
But Curry has all the money in the world. He's got all the big backers. He can deal with a Mike Hogan now that he's the incumbent. I mean, I think Curry is going to be the favorite for re-election.
I agree with you, but Alvin Brown was favored to win, and he governed very conservatively. He didn't want to have anyone coming at him from the right, but that happened.
But he was a Democrat, and the simple fact is that this is still a Republican town. It's much easier to knock off a black Democrat than a white Republican.
Let's go to Max. Max is on the air. Hi, Max. Good morning.
Good morning. I was very happy to hear this question this morning. You guys are having a very good show.
Thank you.
It's true that Mayor Curry wants to do something that with the pension system, which we all want to do something about as voters, but he also was fighting adamantly to oppose whatever Alvin Brown was doing because he wanted to come and take over. Now, this is a high-end seed that the Republicans are playing just to judge people with something that they just opposed, and then now they try to do something that even worse than Alvin Brown was doing. I don't understand why they want to do that. And then they try to raise taxes on properties I was here when Mayor Delaney was coming with that proposal. We all support it because we know what the good he would have done for us after Hitler and Floyd. But now it is not the time for them to raise taxes on homeowners. In the meantime, then they pay rate going down. They don't want to support any increased pay for people who taxpay it.
Okay, thanks, Max. Thanks, Max.
You know, I think we got to give Curry his due. I mean, John Payton and Alvin Brown, they broke their teeth on this issue. They couldn't figure out how to do it. Curry has come up with a plan. He's gotten it through. He's gotten what he needed to do through the legislature. But, you know, he needs to make that final push, I think, and really just be honest with people and tell people, you know, here's what it's going to do. Here's the date when we're going to start to benefit from it. And, you know, if he does that, if he levels with people, I think it'll pass.
Jason in San Marco. Go ahead, Jason.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I have two comments. Number one is, whatever happened to the concept of a balanced approach to solving this problem? It only seems, in common sense looking at it, that we should have a small millage increase and a small sales tax increase, that these two together will solve the problem, and that people, the citizens, will applaud a politician who actually solves the problem instead of kicking it down the road. And my other comment, and for example, in my household, to make the budget work, I go out and find more sources of revenue, more jobs, more income, and at the same time, I go around my house, I turn my thermostat up, and I turn the lights off in the rooms that aren't being used. So I'm getting a balanced approach to solving my own budget problems. The other thing I wanted to say, and I've said it before, so if I'm repeating myself, I apologize, but the city is sitting on millions and millions and millions of dollars of real estate that generates no income tax at all. And if they figure out a way to sell that real estate, which is pretty simple, then they would bring in a lot of cash and they would increase the tax base. I don't even see why that, I mean, that seems to me like the first place they should start.
Okay.
Because they're strapped trying to maintain these properties.
All right, Jason. Thanks. Several points from Jason.
Yeah.
Larry.
Of course, Jason can make these decisions on his own. He doesn't need hundreds of thousands of people to vote in favor of turning down the thermostat. That makes it a little
But what about his comment that a balanced approach would be a sales tax hike and a millage
increase? I think that makes perfect sense. But, you know, right now the Republican Party is opposed to property tax increases for any reason. And Curry's not going there. And, you know, sales taxes for whatever reason the acceptable way. And if this fails on August 30th, it'll be interesting to see if Curry is more open to the possibility of a property tax increase after that.
Right. And Curry painted himself into a corner by saying there'd be no tax increases on his watch. So, that, you know, politically, that's off the table.
Well, we need to move on and discuss a few other news and notes from the week, but we really welcome your calls on all the topics of the day at 549-2937. Also making headlines this week, Governor Scott Wednesday called on President Obama to immediately fund mosquito control measures in Florida, along with Zika preparedness kits. There's a lot of worry about an outbreak of this virus. It can cause serious birth defects, and it is sweeping through other parts of South and Central America right now. The president already requested nearly $2 billion in funds to fight the spread of Zika, but so far the GOP-controlled Congress has not approved the plan. Both Senators Marco Rubio and Bill Nelson are sounding the alarm loudly about the threat of Zika in Florida. Fred Matthews.
Well, our governor must have been working in the department if you've got a lot of nerve to make this request to the president whom he has criticized for bloating government and not supporting it with his own Congress. He should be making this plea to Congress. Get to the committee and talk to the what? I mean, you got to – there's no money. There's no money coming from Congress.
It just looks like a chance to throw mud at Obama and, you know, try to get it to stick.
Which Scott is always happy to do. And I should point out, as I did before the show, that when both Marco Rubio and Bill Nelson agree on something, it's probably a good idea to do it.
We are looking at a serious public health threat in this state, perhaps more than any other state in America, over Zika.
Yeah,
AG.
Exactly. And, you know, Rick Scott, you know, holding out his empty can and saying, "Barack Obama, fill it," is one of the most ironic images of the week.
Please, sir, I'd like some more.
You know, really, the issue is this. If we're not getting the federal funding, Rick Scott's got to find a way to do it in the state budget. You know, appealing to Washington, D.C. to fix the problem for Florida is not the solution in this case, because there just isn't the will in the legislative branch.
And again, one of the this is also, at this point, a regional issue nationwide. Folks in the Northeast, those in the far West, the Northwest, they're not feeling it. So their representatives aren't necessarily feeling it yet. And that's one of the reasons why it didn't get very much traction in Congress. And the committee's trying to just get out of committee to get to be appropriate.
If it's now an existential threat, what are we going to be looking at when it becomes real? Right. And we see kids being born in this country with these hideous birth defects.
Yeah, I mean, we saw this, you know, a few years ago when there was flooding in some parts of the country. Other representatives in other parts just basically said, "Not my problem. I'm not concerned about it." And now it's come to Florida, and we've got representatives in other places that just don't care.
I don't know for sure, but I think I get a feeling that this is kind of a black backlash from the Ebola virus thing of a couple of years ago, where, you know, the scare headlines came out real early, and really it never materialized in this country. I think people are kind of looking back on that.
You think
saying,
people are too complacent given that?
Yeah, it's kind of like hurricane season. Mm-hmm. You know, we haven't gotten a hurricane. No, yeah, yes, I do. I think they're complacent. I think they doubt the seriousness of it.
One solution is a really obvious one: mosquito eradication. You know, if you've got cities that do mosquito eradication, have them step it up. Basically, make sure that the thing that actually carries the virus isn't allowed to flourish. I mean, we've seen cuts in that in recent years in the city. The city needs to find money in the budget to ramp it up. And this is true with all cities.
Maybe a property tax increase would help.
Okay. It's 549-2937. What are your thoughts about gender neutral bathrooms? Give us a call. Because despite the ongoing controversy around this issue all over the country, one local institution is letting folks know where it stands. The Museum of Science and History in Jacksonville on the South Bank now has an open gender-neutral restroom. Executive Director Maria Hain says it's part of the MOSH's mission to educate the community and create an environment that is welcoming to all. The Jacksonville Coalition for Equality sent a statement this week in support of the decision. So far, no backlash against the MOSH that we know of, but this is the latest in this issue here in Jacksonville.
And I think we're going to see more and more of these. It's simply good business for people to have gender-neutral bathrooms. It's inclusive. If you don't like the gender-neutral bathroom, you just don't have to go in there. It's it's kind of a no-brainer, really.
Fred?
Well, I mean, it's one of those things that businesses can do. And that's what the MOSH is, nonprofit. It can do it. And that's it doesn't require a government regulation. This is something we're going to do. And that's what any business can do. They can do this until there's some government mandate that says you can't or you shouldn't. And this isn't a non-discriminatory act. So there's nothing to protest or be angry about. But every business can do this or not.
MOSH apparently has had that gender-neutral bathroom for quite a while, and yeah, people didn't notice.
People didn't know.
You know, that's kind of the thing. I mean, if you know, if we can't get change made on this public accommodations issue on the legislative front, then the private sector needs to step up and model it. I think the JCE and other groups, you know, could, you know, perhaps message around places that have gender-neutral bathrooms and basically, you know, model the behavioral change they want to seek. And by doing so, they might get better traction in the legislative process.
And these types of businesses that draw crowds and draw the public in, and that's part of their business, that's a natural place to start. Will we be seeing this type of thing in office buildings? I don't know.
Yeah, we'll have to see. Meanwhile, Adam tweets the show, "I don't care which bathroom you use as long as you wash your hands."
Amen.
Thank you, Adam.
Don't tell me what to do.
Okay. And speaking of water cleanliness, this morning, Jacksonville Beach Public Works officials say it's now safe for residents at the beach to drink water from the tap. Earlier, the utility sent out advisories saying that the water at Jack's Beach had higher than normal chemical concentrations of a contaminant, which really alarmed folks in that community. Just wanted to make note of that. They're now saying you can drink the water in Jacksonville Beach.
Whoa.
Finally, it's our collection of strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous stories from the week. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. Well, only in Florida do you mess up your backswing out on the golf course when you spot a massive alligator crossing the fairway. You really have to look at this video to believe it. A foursome out for a round at the Buffalo Creek course down in Central Florida spotted a huge, and I mean it's a huge gator, walking by the third hole. Naturally, they whipped out their phones and began recording. This gator is so large, he's moving very slowly across the green. Check out the footage online.
Four!
His handicap was plus six.
Only in Florida do people drive a real-life Flintstones car and park it illegally. On Thursday, Key West police issued a photo of a glorious real-life Fred Flintstone car complete with a dinosaur bone-shaped window and zebra upholstery. But the vehicle was parked illegally on a public street, so before towing it, they tried to find the modern Stone Age owner. After just a few short hours, Key West police updated their Facebook post saying they had located the owner of this car, but sadly, they never identified him or her, explained what's up with this whole thing.
Yabba-dabba-doo. Caveman outfit.
I think you'll all like this one. Finally, only in Florida does a major political convention entertain the delegates with the little flashing of some skin. Yes, the Libertarian Party convention caught the attention of a lot of people here in Florida over the weekend, and not just because they were choosing their presidential ticket. James Weeks, who was in the running to be the party chairman, took to the stage in Orlando and performed a full strip tease.
He really needed support, bro.
He said, "Hey, let's have a little bit of fun," to the crowd, as well as viewers tuned into C-SPAN. They broadcast the whole thing.
Some people were meant to show skin. I saw it. That man is not.
No.
Whoa.
Thanks to our media. Thanks to our fully clothed media panel, Larry Hannon, A.G. Gankarski, Fred Matthews, and John Burr. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Another political convention is in Jacksonville this weekend. We'll tell you about that and more news right after this.
I'm Jackie Carter, Executive Secretary for Duval County's Emergency Operations Center. Have a plan for home, work, and school. Planning can save you valuable time and money in a disaster. Visit jacksready.com for more information and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
It's kind of scary to learn of a superbug resistant to antibiotics of last choice. Have we arrived in a post-antibiotic era? I'm Ira Flatow. On Science Friday, we'll look at how we might beat these bugs, including a Back to the Future strategy using viruses to attack bacteria. It's all on Science Friday from PRI.
Fridays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
A healthcare experiment is going on in New York, and early reports suggest it could save money and improve care.
When I was a child, when I was feeling sick, I'd tell my mama. My mama would call the doctor, and the doctor would come to the house.
I'm Molly Wood. A look at Mount Sinai Hospital's pilot home care program next time on Marketplace from APM.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, the state's young Democrats are converging on downtown Jacksonville this weekend for their annual convention, with some big names from the local, state, and national party expected to attend and speak. Crystalis Estanga of the Jacksonville Young Democrats is here with a preview. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And the Young Dems of Jax are hosting this convention.
Correct.
So yes. What's on the agenda?
So we have a lot of things going on. We've been planning this for months, and so we're glad to finally say that it's almost over. But first, we have to go through it. And as far as the agenda, we have the keynote speaker, Gwen Graham, Congresswoman and daughter of former Governor Bob Graham. And we also have a lot of young Democrats coming from across the state to Jacksonville, which we are really excited about because we really want to show off Jacksonville and what it has to offer. We have panels with experts talking on environmental issues, the HRO, of course, it's a very local hot issue, and criminal justice, which is something that I want to bring into the conversation as Democrats.
Tell us a little bit about the young Democrats all around the state. Your organization here in Jacksonville has really grown in recent years. Florida is a famous swing state, split about halfway down the middle, and it's gone Democratic at the presidential level the last couple of times. The infrastructure of the Young Democrats, what's the mission in terms of growing a statewide network, I guess?
So basically, we see a gap or a need in the Democratic Party in Florida where we need to build a bench. So we don't have the resources or the tools for people who aspire to run for seats, for young Democrats to grab onto to say, hey, if I want to run for office, this is what I have to do. This is the kind of resume that I have to build. These are the people and the network that I have to navigate. And so we want to build that program, that infrastructure for people to be for the state to be able to build the bench for young Democrats to be able to run. So we're doing that through resume building, direct action. So we're going to Tallahassee to lobby so we can get experience talking to our political or elected officials in Tallahassee. So we're doing that statewide. And we're also doing that with our local chapters locally.
Now, let me ask you as well, DNC Chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Congresswoman Schultz from South Florida, runs the Democratic National Committee. She may or may not be at the event. Is that right?
Right. So right now, we don't know. And that's something that actually the decision is being made by the state presidents and vice presidents. And so that's something that they're dealing with. And we are not in that whole decision-making process. But we do welcome her because she is the chair of the party. And it's very rare that any state convention, any young Democrat convention at the state level will ever get the chair of the party, the national party, to be at their convention. So we do welcome her if she's willing to come.
If she's able to come.
Right.
It would be interesting to see how that goes, considering that young Democrats in Florida and nationally have overwhelmingly supported Bernie Sanders.
Right.
Of course, now Hillary Clinton is closing in on the party's Democratic nomination. Your group in Jacksonville and statewide overwhelmingly has been behind Sanders. There's a perception in the Democratic Party that Debbie Wasserman Schultz perhaps was a little too partial toward Hillary Clinton. How are the young Democrats in Florida dealing with that difference in the party?
Right. So, so yes, it is true that a lot of us do support Bernie Sanders, myself included, full disclosure. But we do also want to respect the position of the chair. And organizationally, if the chair wants to come to our convention, we will not say no. Just out of respect for that position, no matter who that person is. The way we're dealing with it is that we have Debbie Wasserman Schultz interested in coming. Don't know if she's going to come. If she does come, it does bring a lot of spotlight and attention to Florida Young Democrats that we can use to get behind and support our progressive causes.
How is that in Jacksonville for your organization? When you think of Florida, the old expression is always that you have to go north to get to the south, that, you know, South Florida and increasingly Central Florida are centrist to progressive. North Florida is more conservative.
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to build a progressive organization in a part of the state that, as you said, that type of infrastructure, that type of network has not typically existed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for the past year, we've been lucky that we have a state board that actually thinks really strategically and wants to build a really strong organization. And so we see that culture of sort of spreading into the local chapters as well. We have presidents, including myself, who are really strategy-driven, and we really want to see results in our party. And so as far as building a Democratic or a progressive organization, we do have the support of many donors for what we're doing for our platform. And we have chapters in really blue parts of the state, in Palm Beach and Broward. We have chapters in really red parts of the state, Jacksonville included, Okaloosa and Citrus. And we're very proud of the fact that we're all over the state and we're acting in sort of in one accord to fulfill a mission. And that really is to make sure that we have the connections locally and statewide to build that infrastructure.
What are your thoughts about criticism of the local Democratic Party structure? Not you, the Young Democrats, but the official local Democratic, older Democratic Party structure, not even fielding candidates in some of the major races this cycle, like the races for public defender and state attorney. That has resulted in those primaries being closed to more than half the primary voters.
And so that's definitely part of the problem, we think, as Florida Young Democrats, that we see sort of weak DECs. Those are Democratic Executive Committees, which are the local, the county chapters of the Democratic Party in Florida. And we want to basically engage young voters and young Democrats in our Young Democrat chapters, but in order to get into the local county Democratic committees, so that we can sort of bring a new flavor and maybe more ideas to the local county parties. So the way we're approaching that is basically getting people engaged and getting them engaged in the party through the Democratic Executive Committees.
What's the average age of your organization?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say maybe 24.
Pretty young. That,
yeah.
Yeah.
25,
under 30.
Yeah.
And so all of this kicks off tonight at the 1904 Music Hall.
Yes. Yeah, so at 7 p.m., we have a welcome reception that we are welcoming everybody to. And basically, it's just a very light, informal reception at 1904. And then everything will get started tomorrow at 9 with Councilwoman Joyce Morgan giving us the welcoming sort of address. And we're going to kick it off with trainings and panels and all the way to the dinner with Gwen Graham.
All right. Well, thanks so much for being with us.
All right. Thank you so much.
Crystal Sestanga heads up the Jacksonville Young Democrats. And in a moment, it's a night with the stars, a glamorous evening right here at WJCT. We'll tell you about it in a moment.
WJCT's Great Auction is where you'll find over 300 items, most starting at 75% off at auction.wjct.org. Packages include lodging, attractions, dining, recreation, beauty, and more. Bid now. The auction continues through June 13th at 8 p.m. Log on to auction.wjct.org for more information.
There's a saying about drunks that men wake up in jail cells, women wake up in strangers' beds. That generalization rang true for Sarah Heppala in her drinking days when she considered alcohol the fuel of all adventure. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Heppala about her memoir, Blackout. It comes out in paperback next week. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
WJCT and Baptist Health are pleased to announce that Amy Robach, news anchor of ABC's Good Morning America, will be this year's afternoon keynote speaker at Girls Day Out, September 17, 2016, Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Amy is also a breast cancer awareness advocate and author of My Breast Cancer Journey, From Fighter to Thriver. For more information or for tickets, log on to wjct.org/girlsdayout.
So I walk in the bookstore, and sitting at the counter in this metaphysical bookstore is what I really can only describe him as, Satan's valet.
Join us for more true stories told live, a Michigan special. Fortune tellers, autism, seminary school, and a factory fire. That's on the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, it's a glamorous affair, but one with a great mission, serving this area's aging population. A Night with the Stars is set for this weekend right here at WJCT Studios, Saturday night, with a theme featuring crooners, cars, and cocktails. It's all a benefit for Elder Source of Northeast Florida. Communications Director Andrea Spencer is here to tell us more. Good morning.
Good morning.
And this is a fabulous event that you've had at WJCT for some years now. We'll talk all about that in a moment. But first, Elder Source is on the front line in this area, collaborating with other groups to make this region of the state age-friendly. And
yes.
I love that term. Can you tell us about it?
Being age-friendly means not only a community that deals with individuals who are 50, 60, 70, but it also means working with the community to find ways that people can age in place.
Right.
So people love our community. Jacksonville is a wonderful area to age in place. So you look at the infrastructure, the transportation, the crosswalks, you look at businesses being age sensitive. So you have a population that is escalating very, very quickly. And by the year 2030, 1 in 3 people will be over the age of 60.
Mm-hmm.
So you have 65, there are 10,000 people turning 65 every day. So you have so many opportunities to look at your business, look at your community, to create an environment for these individuals to age in place and be friendly and accepting toward, you know, someone who may have a visual impairment or a hearing impairment, and being sensitive to that. So making it welcoming and adaptable to this community that's aging.
We tend to think of South Florida as having all the retirees, but and Jacksonville is a much younger city, but there's a big senior population here, too.
There is a tremendous, and again, you look at the numbers, and we cover 7 counties from Nassau all the way down to Flagler, Volusia. Flagler has got, right now, I think it's about 19%, but it's projected to jump up to 22-26% of the population to be 60. And I want to say 60 and older. I've heard a phrase the other day. They said 60 and better. So
very
I
nice.
Think that
yeah.
that truly means, you know, people are sensitive to, don't call me a senior. I don't want to be part of that silver tsunami, which is another phrase, but 60 and better.
Uh-huh.
And that is meaning a community that is very, as I said, welcoming and adapting to those who are aging.
So what are the main initiatives Elder Source is looking at to make this area a welcoming place then for people 60 and better?
Well, you had mentioned earlier the collaborative effort. So we are part of that Rethink Aging, which is part of the JCCI study, the inquiry of looking at a community, and it's part of AARP's initiative. We are right there at the forefront of looking at different ways throughout our community. So again, I had mentioned transportation. We do what we call a needs assessment. So I think it's every 3 years we do a needs assessment of what do these communities need to do. And again, transportation is huge in this community. Of course, Duval is very spread out. And how do seniors get around to doctor's appointments? How do they get around to go to the movie theater? So I think we will be working very closely with a lot of the community leaders to look at transportation. Mm-hmm. Of course, you've got the population who are very, very active. The YMCA, the First Coast YMCA, is at the table with this group of collaborators and looking for ways to keep them engaged and happy and active and moving. And you just had hosted here at WJCT, Bill Thomas. I think you had him on your show.
Yeah, the AARP speaker.
Absolutely. Yeah. So he had talked about that mesh principle, you know, moving, eating, sleeping, and being healthy. So we, again, are highly sensitive to that. So when you look at what ElderSource does, and we are the Area Agency on Aging and Aging and Disability Resource Center, we are the hub for people to call in. And I love our tagline, it's start here for help. There are, I can't tell you how many outreach activities that I do, and people are saying, I don't know where to start. Mm-hmm. I've got three things that are on my mind. I'm a caregiver. Where do I start for help? Well, you call us. And we are the connectors to all those resources in the community that give you that link, that fishing line that you need to reel yourself in and find out how to connect.
So many people need resources, but they don't know that they're even available or how to find them. And it's myeldersource.org to get started if you need to be linked up. Meanwhile, with all of that said, tomorrow night is a big party here at WJCT, Night with the Stars.
Yes, we love having it here. It's year three, and it's a Rat Pack era theme. We've got a 15-piece orchestra, and this event is our annual fundraising event, and this is really the biggest event that we do, but we make it really, really fun.
Yeah.
So it's called Crooners, Cars, and Cocktails. We're going to be pulling in two beautiful cars into the studio. We've got the band. We've got, of course, the food and the music. And it's all to benefit ElderSource and our mission of helping seniors and caregivers connect to the resources that they need. So we're excited about it.
And don't people kind of dress from the era?
Oh, my goodness. We've had, some people say, oh, my gosh, do I need to be all dressed up in the vintage-y? Not necessarily. A beautiful black cocktail dress just does it. But, yes, we have folks that, go all out. And they love that dance music. So we've got it live, and it's going to be hot and fun. So
who's the band?
It's called Amelia Crescendo Big Band. And if you have ever followed them, they have a following. So one of the cool things that we're doing, we've invited some of their dance followers, and they are going to be out there on the dance floor. And if you want to see great dancing, great uh-huh. vintage dancing, they are out there tomorrow night.
And you've kept this theme for a few years now. What do you think it is about this theme that is so popular folks?
I think people like that throwback feel. They love, I think it's the music. I think it's the ambiance. I think it's just kind of the entourage. You're part of this entourage of very cool people back in an era where, you know what, it was very glitzy and fun. It's mm-hmm. very, very fun.
That's right. This is tomorrow night, by the way, ElderSource's annual event, A Night with the Stars, here at WJCT in our studios. Not too late for people to come and be part of it.
Right. We've got over 200 tickets sold, but there's still plenty of room. If you're interested, it's $75 a person, beautiful heavy hors d'oeuvres and a band. Go to myeldersource.org. You can click on that link and buy your ticket today, tomorrow. But I hope
even
you show up.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is a city, I've said this a million times, where people kind of just show up. They just kind of decide at the last minute, oh, maybe I'll go to that. And they just roll up to the event. That's okay too.
Perfectly
right?
Fine. We'd love to have you.
It's myeldersource.org, myeldersource.org. This area's agency of record for seniors, can I say seniors or should I say 60 and better?
You can say, actually, we are even ratcheting it down to 50 and better.
Okay, so, see, now you're getting close to my territory. I don't know about that. I'm going to have to think about that. But I'm just kidding. It's myeldersource.org, and it's A Night with the Stars tomorrow night here at WJCT. Go online now, get your tickets, come and be part of Crooners, Cars, and Cocktails. A really fun event. One of the most fun events we host here all year is everybody always says. So kudos on that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And she's Andrea Spencer. Again, that website to get your tickets, myeldersource.org. That event is tomorrow night. Come on out to our location and have some fun. Well, that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch, and the show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Questions and comments, please send them to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Make sure to subscribe to the daily podcast at iTunes and Stitcher, and watch the show now video on demand with our partner, tvjax.com. Diane Reams up next with a look at the week's top national news stories. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow, or 9 a.m. Monday, rather. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.
Chasing the Dream, Poverty and Opportunity in America is a multi-platform public media initiative that provides a deeper understanding of the impact of poverty on American society. Tune in to the PBS NewsHour weeknights at 7 on WJCT-TV for compelling stories of individuals and organizations addressing such issues. And log on to chasingthedreamproject.org. Funding for this initiative is provided by the JPB Foundation and Ford Foundation. Local funding provided by Wells Fargo.
There's a line. Draw it in the sand, put it in water, mark it in blood. But once you cross it, there is no going back. On the next Snap Judgment, Unforgiven. Snap Judgment, storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
For everyone discovering life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, the website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. It's today's modern guide for adulthood, part 2. Sponsored in part by AARP, Real Possibilities.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.